2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Everybody, welcome to the DFS and Donut Shop. My name is Mitch, but you can call me Donuts. I provide content for Numberfire, Fantasy Draft, Draft Sharks, and the DFS Army. You can find me on Twitter at DFS and Donuts. Before we get started, head on over to DFSandArmy.com, check out the site, use promo Donuts for 10% off anything that might tickle your fancy. All right, week 7 is here. I hope that you survived week 6. It was kind of strange. There were a lot of spots that people thought would be beautiful blow-up spots, and guess what? Most of them ended up being just that. It was quite chalky. There were a few chalk explosions, and there were a few that bit you in the butt. So, week 7, we need to be careful as we wade into the treacherous waters that appear to be what the DFS landscape will be for week 7. It's a tough week, and we're going to have to really deep dive into some data as the week goes by, and this podcast will be a brief overview of what the main slate looks like for week 7. And I'm going to break down each game quickly from what my Tuesday thoughts are. First one is the Minnesota Vikings at the New York Jets. This is a very interesting game as the Jets have they've had a few high-scoring affairs this year, and they're running into a pretty decent team. The Vikings might continue to just rest and rehab Dalvin Cook, who I'm starting to think is just having issues from post-ACL surgery. You know, sometimes it takes guys a couple years to return from those, you know, significant injuries, and not everybody's created equal. I mean, we saw Adrian Peterson come back maybe 9 months after his, and he played a full season. Well, Dalvin Cook is not Adrian Peterson. Nobody is. And Cook might just be having some soft tissue issues with maybe a little bit of imbalance in strength and integrity of his muscles and ligaments. I'm not a doctor. I'm just completely guessing. You know, it appears that something's going on. He has not been healthy for most of the season. If he's out again, long story short, Latavius Murray back in play. Don't care about his increased price tag. I like the idea of stacking Murray with the Vikings defense, even though they're on the road. The 3-point favorites against a rookie quarterback. I can see them being in a good spot where he makes a few mistakes. Well, maybe possibly trying to keep pace with Kirk Cousins and all his best friends. Specifically, Adam Thielen, who is on his way to his 7th straight 100-yard receiving game. Yes, on his way. The New York Jets, I can't remember specifically if it was 109 yards per game to the slot receiver or not, but it was something around there with that number. They were one of the worst defenses in the league against slot receivers. And what do you know, Adam Thielen, slot receiver. So the Jets giving up the most passing yards in the league to opposing slot receivers, and Adam Thielen the most receiving yards in the NFL, and he's going to join an elite group of wide receivers here and after week 7 here, and he'll be one game away from tying Calvin Johnson if he can make it 8 weeks with 8 games in a row with over 100 yards. What a beast. Detroit Lions at Miami Dolphins. Now, this game is interesting for DFS because the Dolphins may or may not need Brock Osweiler to start another game. If he does, I actually like the Lions defense. Even though we saw the Bears struggle in that hot and humid weather in Miami, you know, Lions are coming off a bye. They're in a good spot against Miami and Brock Osweiler, who there's enough film and footage out there and a large enough sample size to know that Brock Osweiler is not good. The Lions defense could turn in the performance that everyone thought the Bears would have. And if Osweiler starts this next week and everyone's nervous after what they saw and they don't go back to the well on the defense against him, you know, it might get the Lions at a really low ownership on the road, too, against Brock Osweiler. My goodness. Any defense against Brock Osweiler, home or away, doesn't matter to me. As a defense, I'm going to be targeting no matter what. And that Lions defense could certainly be under-owned if Osweiler starts. And they might even be a better play if Tannehill starts that game, because people will completely hop off the Lions defense if they're being talked about around the industry. So I might stay on them either way here. Houston at Jacksonville. The Jaguars are 4.5-point favorites in a game with a 43-point total against the visiting Houston Texans. Now, we saw Deshaun Watson just get absolutely obliterated by the Buffalo Bills. It was seemingly every other drop back. He was just getting pounded by that Bills pass rush. And this is something that's been happening all season, and he's starting to take a beating. He came into that game questionable with a chest injury, and if he can't start to get rid of that ball a little bit sooner, I'm afraid for Deshaun Watson. I'm worried about his long-term health. I'm worried about his health for this season, and I'm worried about him from week to week. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars don't have that electric pass rush that some other teams do that, you know, the Texans have faced or will face. They're not the Bears' aggressiveness, but they have some lockdown corners that really make up for the lack of a pass rush, and I can only imagine how good this defense would be if they had an elite pass rusher or two. I'm likely not going to Deshaun Watson for the first time all year. I won't be stacking him with DeAndre Hopkins for the first time all year, even though Hopkins only has one game over his last 19 where he's scored less than double-digit points on both FanDuel and DraftKings. He's just not somebody I'm going to go to when I believe that Jalen Ramsey and slipping my mind whom the other cornerback's name is, but both of them are elite cornerbacks, and they're just going to cap the scoring ceiling of this entire Texans offense. On the Jacksonville Jaguars side, man alive, without Leonard Fournette, they just keep chucking the ball. I don't like any of them, though. I don't like their prices. Volatile choices. Texans have a good pass rush. They're starting to round into form here, and they're really getting after the quarterback. I think that the Jaguars defense is in a get-right spot. I'm kind of worried about the Texans. I like both defenses. I don't really like both offenses. That's a reoccurring theme as I look through a lot of these games, actually. The Cleveland Browns at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All right, so this game has a nice, hefty total. However, there's only one team I'm really looking at. Even though the Bucs are 3-point favorites, they're receiving nearly 70% of the public bets, and likely we'll see the line continue to move in Tampa's favor. I think that the play is actually the Browns. You know, everybody saw Jameis Winston go out there and just go absolutely ballistic on the Atlanta Falcons defense. But guess what? Who hasn't? The Falcons are wretched, and they're missing so many crucial pieces on that defensive side of the ball that it doesn't matter who's going to go up against them this year. They're going to put up a good game. And if you need to know just how bad they are, I don't think you need to look at Jameis Winston's stats. I think you need to look at Peyton Barber. The guy had the most efficient game of his NFL career. He didn't get a lot of touches, but my word, he looked like Barry Sanders out there. He looked untouchable because the Falcons can't tackle. I think the Cleveland Browns offense is where to go this week. I'm going to be extremely heavy-handed on my exposure to them. I'm going to talk about a bunch of different stacks, some run-back stacks with Tampa players on the other side, and exposure parameters I'll be using on this game specifically and the Browns offense as an individual unit. But I'm not going to talk about that on this podcast. I'm going to save that for my MME playbook, which has kind of morphed itself into an entire GPP breakdown each and every week of how I kind of look at the slate, what I'm thinking individually about players, what I'm thinking is game flow and game theory and game scripts. There's a lot of juice here, and I just don't want to give it away for free. I'm going to be keeping that for the VIP members. If you're intrigued and you want to take a read and take a gander at this, this specific GPP playbook is around 7,000 to 7,200 words on average over the last 3 weeks. I was intrigued to see how many pages that is if that were to be posted into Word, Microsoft Word. It was 30 pages. So your membership through the DFS Army, you know, if you use promo donuts, 10% off your membership, you're going to get a 30-page paper, most likely a 30-page paper of a complete breakdown of my personal player pool, my exposure settings, my thoughts on the slate, some pivots, what the cash is. I identify who to pivot to, who to pivot off of, game theories, all that good stuff. One final nugget from this game is Jarvis Landry gets to face the team that's given up the second most receiving yards to opposing slot wide receivers in 2018. Landry, similar to Adam Thielen, is a nice cash game play, and they'll definitely both be in a lot of my GPPs. Now, the Carolina Panthers at the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, this game, I don't think will be heavily targeted by the DFS community, but I love both quarterbacks. Cam Newton finished with his fourth straight game with multiple touchdown passes, and he tacked on another 43 yards rushing. He's an elite cash game option. He has had two quote-unquote bad games this year where he scored over 18 fantasy points on both FanDuel and DraftKings in both of those bad games. His good games, 24, 29, and 28. Of course, I'm rounding up 24, 29, 28 with a floor of 18. This guy is a steal, specifically on DraftKings at $5,900. We're looking at a guy that's returned 4 to 5 times value in 4 of his 5 games. What a beast, man. I love this guy. And he's staying healthy. He's getting red zone work, getting red zone passes, getting red zone carries, throwing the ball deep. Greg Olsen played 59 of 60 snaps in Week 7. He did haul in, I believe he had 7 targets, finished with 4 receptions. He proved he was healthy, though, and that's the most important thing. And I'm going back to the well with Greg Olsen. I love him with Cam Newton. I think a lot of the field will be on Zach Ertz, and for good reason. He is just a beacon of consistency. And, you know, by going to the other side of the field and grabbing Greg Olsen, you already built yourself a unique lineup just by taking the lower-owned tight end out of the same game. Now, Carson Wentz, in the same vein of Cam Newton, is a very consistent cash game option. But they both have ceilings that make them GPP viable as well. Now, speaking of Carson Wentz here, he's had 8 games out of his last 9 where he scored over 20 DraftKings points. Eight of his last 9. That one game under 20 DraftKings points was his first game back this year from his ACL injury. I think we can give him the benefit of the doubt. He's priced at just $6,000 on DraftKings and $7,600 on FanDuel. He's been extremely efficient. He's completing over 66% of his passes this year in all 4 games. I love him in this spot. I love Cam Newton in this spot, and I love both their tight ends. Alshon Jeffrey continues to look like a legit number one wide receiver. He has 29 targets in 3 games, and he's hauled in 3 touchdowns in as many games. He also has 5 red zone targets in those 3 games. This is a really, really, really nice game, and it's going to be hard for me not to go here. It's going to be really hard, and I'll likely probably just stick to Njoku, who I didn't mention, and I didn't mean to just mention now. Anyways, I might as well go ahead. Njoku, Olsen, and Ertz. But Njoku for the Browns, boy, oh boy. We've seen him accumulate 30 targets in the last 3 starts. He's had 23 in the last 2. All 3 of those starts, specifically the last 2 as well, were all with Baker Mayfield. He is the number 2 option, and he is getting over 25% of the targets. My word, we have to start thinking this guy is an elite tight end 1, and he is only, I believe, $4,200 on DraftKings and $5,700 on FanDuel. So throw him in the mix with Olsen and Ertz. Now, New England Patriots at the Chicago Bears. This game is slightly tricky. Okay, in most instances, I think that the Patriots would be in a trap spot on the road after a huge home win on Sunday Night Football and a massive shootout. Everybody in the world saw that game. They all talked about it at work around the water cooler. Everybody knows the Patriots offense is back, baby. And then they go on the road to face the defense who, before last week, was very reliable and had multiple turnovers and 4+ sacks in every single game of the year going into Week 6. And what did they do? They threw up pretty much a dud against Brock Osweiler, of all people. But I think a lot of that had to do with just lack of conditioning, and they really struggled and were sucking wind. They looked gassed in that hot and humid Miami weather. So you got a team like the Bears going back home after not playing well. You know, going back home is a nice, it's a nice remedy when a team just kind of throws up a dud. But unfortunately for the Bears defense, they're facing the Patriots. I think that this is slightly a bounce back spot for them, though. I do think they get after Brady a little bit, but Brady doesn't make mistakes. This entire game is pretty much hands off for me because I just think that the strength of both teams and the spot that they're both in kind of negates the ceiling, the scoring ceiling of all relative pieces. Now, I do slightly like Mitchell Trubisky stacked with Tariq Cohen specifically in that kind of that dump-off mode, that catch-up mode that the Bears might have to be playing as they're clawing their way back in the contention if the Patriots do go off the chain. Now, the Buffalo Bills are traveling to the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are going to be uber chalk. They're going to be mega chalk. Mega chalk. I feel like I could do those the movie layovers. Maybe not. But Colts defense is going to be incredibly chalky against Nathan Peterman, who has more career interceptions than touchdowns by more than a 2-to-1 ratio. That's pathetic. That is incredibly pathetic. The Bills are 8-point road dogs to the Colts, who are top 5 in the NFL in sacks. They're going to be all over Peterman. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. I'm just not going to overthink this one. I'm going to be using the Colts in cash games, and I'm going to certainly have quite a few shares of them in GPPs and specifically in my 150 max MME files. This might finally be the game where the Colts don't have to force Andrew Luck to blow out his shoulder again. It just absolutely boggles my mind that this guy has pretty much not been on the field for 2 seasons, and then he's finally healthy, and what do? They have him on pace to not only break, but absolutely shatter the NFL passing attempt record in his first season back. Way to go, Indianapolis front office. You are just so smart. Now, the New Orleans Saints are traveling to Baltimore. Now, the Ravens were playing some smash mouth football. It was circa 2001 Ravens there, or 2003 Ravens, whichever one it was, that elite defense. They had 11 sacks against the Titans. I believe they had 6 through the first 20 minutes, making Marcus Mariota and his offensive line absolutely miserable throughout the game. Now, I specifically like the Ravens at home against the Road Saints, which are not the same offense over the last decade under Drew Brees. And I think that continues this week. I think that, you know, it's going to be a little bit colder, and it's been cold and rainy in the DMV area for Baltimore and Washington for the last couple weeks, and if that continues, I can see the Saints offense kind of struggling. And I like the Ravens defense, who I think will be under-owned just due to the fear that the Saints bring to the table. Now, Joe Flacco, I believe, is top 5 in the NFL in passing attempts. John Brown entered Week 6. Now, he didn't have a good game, but he entered Week 6 leading the league in air yards and ADOT. That's average depth of target for wide receivers with more than 25 targets. He only had 3 targets in Week 6, but that was largely due to the game flow and him just not being needed to take the top off the defense. I think he'll do that this week. Now, I do think the Saints' defense is underrated. They're starting to round into form a little bit as well, but I do like Flacco and John Brown as a stack and a nice bounce-back spot. The Dallas Cowboys at the Washington Redskins. I am completely off this game, except for using Adrian Peterson and Ezekiel Elliott. I do think both defenses are slightly in play, but both these offenses don't throw the ball enough. They're not very aggressive with it, where the defense is going to get a lot of turnovers. And you need turnovers. You need to be able to rack up those sacks to hopefully get like a strip sack or force pressure where the quarterback will make a mistake, throw a pick six. I don't know if we're going to see that in this game. I think the probability and potential for that to happen is quite low. So no thank you. The Los Angeles Rams are traveling to the San Francisco 49ers. Their game was actually flexed out of the Sunday night game, and the NFL moved in the Cincinnati Bengals against the Kansas City Chiefs, which should be a lot of fun to target for that single game showdown. I'll be using the optimizer at dfsarmy.com for the single game DFS optimizer, so that thing is a beast. Now, for this last main slate game on this Week 7 slate, Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers, I like C.J. Beathard, whatever his name, however you pronounce it. He just continues to be fantasy relevant. He's super cheap, too. I believe he's $6,400 and $5,200 on FanDuel DraftKings. And he has been incredibly willing to throw the ball deep. He can tuck it and run. He doesn't make as many mistakes as he did in 2017 when his number was called upon, and he continues to evade sacks. He's really lowered the opposing defense's scoring potential. Now, the Rams are a different beast. They have a great team, a great offense, a great defense, great on special teams, an underrated aspect of DFS and football in general. You don't need me to be just this superior NFL DFS analyst to say the Rams offense is in play. You know that, okay? You know that. But as far as the exposure settings, the ownership rates and all of that, I'm going to break that down in my GPP playbook. You know they're in play, but the issue is how much are they in play, and what type of variations and correlative stacks are in play. Because I think there's a few specific ones that have immense scoring ceilings, and part of that has to do with the 49ers offense and who's being targeted and who's being used and in what capacity. This is a very difficult slate. There's not much value at all. And I think that this is kind of one of those weeks where you're going to start to see the people that are a part of a community and around strong DFS minds and fantasy minds and around a bunch of strong researchers, you're going to see those types of members of DFS platforms. They're going to kind of separate from the crowd this week. And if you're somebody who's without one, I really hope that you can give us a shot for a month. Try us out. See if you like us. Use promo donuts. Should help you out a little bit. It's just one of those weeks. I don't want you to go at it alone. And I'd love to be able to help you out through our chat. We have a lot of articles, a lot of content, a lot of VIP podcasts specifically just for our members, and a whole plethora of strategy-based articles to read that have been written by a lot of professionals. It's a great week. It's a big week. It's a tough week. I wish you the best of luck. Don't forget, fortune favors the bold.